Today's Ramanujacharya's disappearance day, maybe some worse.
Of course, but are there any other questions?
Well, we will find
there are
some.
Okay. Yeah. And also the other day was the Tirubhava Madhvacharya. Sometimes we do not properly estimate how confidential is Krishna bhakti, devotion to Krishna, because we're ostensibly aspiring devotees of Krishna, aspiring servitors in this line, and we sometimes approach this as if this is something that's known to everybody and shared by everybody and understood by everyone. And there's a certain sweetness to that too, that represents the hearts and sentiments of the greater devotees. As you know, for Radharani and Brajagopis, what to speak of, you know, Vaikuntha Narayan and Vishnu, they're not interested in Dwarka Krishna. So you're talking about the ultimate fanatics or our superior. They only want, you know, Vrindavan Krishna, Krishna with his flute and his cowherd dress on the banks of the Jamuna. And only that will satisfy the inner hankering of their heart. As Krishna is known as Govinda, means not only is he Lord of the cows, but Lord of the senses, in the sense that what our senses would conceive of as ideal or worshipable on the highest level, means the highest type of visual beauty, auditory beauty, taste beauty, touch beauty, the full sensual engagement and an extreme expression of beauty, charm, and sweetness is Krishna conception. Therefore, he's Govinda, right? He alone can really satisfy the inner hankering of the heart as expressed through the senses. As in the spiritual consideration, sensuality is not something that's left to the mundane world, and spirituality is the dry side of the equation. As I've said from time to time, you know, a little lightly, that, you know, we're hardcore sense enjoyers. Because we're seeking a type of enjoyment that transcends mundane sensuality. In that sense, there's a word that's there in English called super sensuous. And you know, super meaning in the sense, you know, super, that transcends. So it's a type, as opposed to saying non-sensual, super sensual means sensual, but beyond the mundane conception of such things. So that means, at least in principle, the Adhoksaja realm. And it's Ramanuja who introduced this, you can say, to the world, but particularly to the Shankarites. Right? So he is their real opposition. So sometimes Srila Guru Maharaj says, like, we're accustomed to the saying like that, you know, Columbus discovered America. Right? That's a saying you hear from time to time. Columbus discovered America. So Guru Maharaj said, Ramanuja discovered Vaikuntha. So just as previously the explorers, what did they do? They were exploring the sea, right? And discovering new worlds. Like for some people, China was a new world that they discovered. course, it wasn't new to the Chinese. They were already living there. Then Columbus discovered America. There were already some people living there. You know, we say Ramanuja discovered Vaikuntha. Lo and behold, there's already people living in Vaikuntha. There's a whole way of divine life there. But he means discovered in the sense that he revealed that to the world. But so as they were discovering the seas, then in the last how many years? 50, 70 years, exploring space, outer space, but really this is about inner space, the realm of consciousness. So in the realm of consciousness, he discovered the Vaikuntha world. Sometimes to help us understand, Srila Guru Maharaj mentions these different planes of experience. Pratyaksha, paroksha, aparoksha, adhoksaja, aprakrita. Pratyaksha means direct experience. What we can see, hear, taste, touch, smell, and feel individually. Right? It's like in common speaking with other people saying, well, I have my own experience. That's true. You have your own experience. Everyone has their own experience. But those who are a little more thoughtful, they realize that therefore my knowledge is limited. If I limit what I can understand to my own direct experience, I'll have a very limited experience of this world and knowledge of this world. So they understand the necessity to inquire from others. Right? Like you haven't been to some place, say, I haven't been to Vaikuntha. Someone else says, I know something about it. I haven't been to another part of the world, something else, some another time in history. So then come pratyaksha. Each one of these words mentioned has the word aksha in it, which means eyes or what can be seen. So pratyaksha, direct experience, directly what is seen. Paroksha means para aksha, what was seen by others or experienced by others. So we understand that can broaden our experience. Just like there's a class of thinkers called pragmatists who their idea is very interesting up to a point. They say, we should concern ourselves with whose opinion matters. Right? Understand? We should concern ourselves with whose opinion matters. So what they mean to say, whether there are gods and goddesses, we don't know. Come on, you don't know and I don't know for sure. So we can't live our lives according to what may please them or be displeasing to them. Like we hear about Greek civilization. They're always talking about, you know, Zeus and this person and that, you know, what's cool with Zeus? We shouldn't, you know, make him angry or something. And these people are saying, we don't know, you know, what Zeus really thinks about things, folks. So, but what we do know, you know how you feel about something, I know how I feel about something, and we have writers who tell us stories about people we've never met before and how they think about things. And maybe those people aren't capable of writing books themselves, so these great writers, they're sort of like the arbiters of human sentiments and emotions. Through them and their stories, we get to feel what the person who's, you know, cultivating rice does, or this person, or people who might not be in our circle. So through literature, we educate ourselves. And so when they say we should concern ourselves with those whose opinion matters, they mean in one very convenient way to eliminate divinity on the basis of you can't really know or verify that. So the whose opinion matters is your opinion and my opinion and all the other people we know. So we should get together, share our opinions, and work something out so that we can live here peacefully. So it sounds like a very sensible proposal and a nice way to navigate the world together in a harmonious way. But And they think that the finest things that have been produced are from the human imagination of artists and thinkers and people who have written stories. Through them, we become empathetic to the feelings of others. So this still comes under the heading of what we call paroksha, para-aksha. What was seen, experienced, heard from others, we factor that in to enrich our own experience. Right? But then there's another class of thinkers. They say, actually, and this is similar to something that Guru Maharaj says, is we're covered by layers of acquired prejudice and acquired tendency, and that's preventing us from understanding what is true or real or meaningful or actually fulfilling. So what we need to do is void ourselves of these things, cleanse ourselves of all that. This we call aparoksha, no experience. All the experience is polluting, contaminating, and misleading. So in Latin, they call it tabula rasa, which means a clean slate, like the teacher who wipes away the mistake off the blackboard and makes everything clear. So then you can put the correct thing. Right? So that's their idea. Samadhi, it's similar to that of Buddhism. Emptiness, remove everything. Remove all experience. And then you'll be clear, happy, or relieved, at least relieved. Right? Voided of all pollution and contamination. But then comes the realm discovered by Ramanuja, which is called Adhoksaja, which is very interesting, saying there's another type of knowledge that descends from the upper world into this plane, and in that process, it suppresses all mundane experience and gives you a touch of divine experience. That is the Adhoksaja realm. That's when Guru Maharaj says to the posing that if the finite can know the infinite, it's not infinite. His response is if the infinite cannot make himself known to the finite, he is not infinite. That's the infinite making itself known to the finite by omni, descending or revealed truth, which suppresses mundane experience. So therefore, no amount of mundane experience can generate the infinite. No amount of finite can generate the infinite. The infinite can reveal himself. So the Upanishads say, Nayam atma pravachanena labhyo namedaya na buhuna sutena. Tame vaisha vivrinute tena labhyas tashaisha atma vivrinute tanum swam. Pravachani, you won't get this by so much discussion or talking about it. Labhyo namedaya, by being extremely intelligent, intellectual, analytical. Bahu namedaya, bahu nayam atma, pravachani na labhyo. What is it? Bahuna srutena, not by so much hearing or even from genuine shruti. As in the case of Ramanuja, his own experience, very interesting. When he was arguing with one Mayavadi, they argued every day for maybe 21 days, something like that. And Ramanuja Charja, we have to understand, he knows every sloka there is. He knows all the perfect arguments. He's the greatest sampradayic representative that you could, offer up against the Mayavadians. And Ramanuja thinks, I've quoted all the right slokas, given all the right examples, and this man, I haven't defeated him. And as they're preparing the next day for the debate, Ramanujacharya is thinking, if I can't defeat him tomorrow, then I will vacate my seat as acharya. I don't deserve to be in that seat. I'll vacate the acharya seat. And so they appear, the next day they come, Ramanujacharya sitting, the opponent sitting. And before Ramanuja starts, the opponent says, actually, I've been thinking about what you said, and you're right, I admit defeat. So on the final day, when he admitted defeat, it's to make a point. There was no argument. As if to tell us, to underscore the point, it's not about argument. It's about heart. Something in that man's heart changed that night. In reconsidering all the arguments of Ramanuja, his heart changed in the evening. So when Ramanuja came, no argument. This is one of my friends. He said he was very impressed with Srila Guru Maharaj's ontological method, all of his examples, his way of preaching. And it occurred to him, he thought, if we can get him, he was thinking that reincarnation is a very important point for everybody to understand, like the transmigration of the soul, the Atmagyan of the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. And he thought, if we can get Srila Sridhar to speak about this, this will be extraordinary, and I'll publish that, and so many people will benefit from hearing that and be converted. That was the idea. So I presented the idea to Srila Guru Maharaj, and he said, if someone has no faith, then you can present a mountain of evidence and they won't accept it. Right? He said, whereas if someone has a little bit of faith, then hearing even a simple example, as we note, the examples Krishna gives in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, they're very simple. Right? He's saying, comparing the body to old dress, saying just as when your dress wears out, you put on a new dress, so when the body is worn out, the soul takes a new body. You know, dehi nos manyata, dehi komaram yobanam jara, how from the we go through many bodily changes in this life, as the embryonic body in the womb of the mother goes through that gestation period, 9 months, comes out, baby, then toddler, child, youth, adolescent, young person, young adult, right? Then older, what do you say? Tata de hantara prapti dhiras tatra namuhyati. Then at the time of death, you get another body. So it's interesting, you're saying, well, that's a leap. Someone said, well, I was following it up to that point, but what do you mean then you get another body? Well, if he's making that statement, then you have to consider what he just said. And what he just said was he gave you at least 4 examples of how the soul withstood the change of bodies within your experience. Because you were once in the womb of your mother. Everybody here was in an embryonic body in the womb of their mother. And even science, they say, or at least they used to say, the body changes every 7 years. I don't know if they still say that, but they used to say that. There might be an update on that. So every 7 years, new body. So if you're 28, 4 changes of body. So he's saying, he's giving you examples within your experience of the soul's ability to withstand the complete change of body. and adding at the end, at the time of death, it'll go into another body. Dhiras tatra namuyati, the self-realized, they won't be bewildered by this. They'll get it. Right? So many examples he's giving there. And also in this regard, yam yam vapi smaram bhavam tyajitante kalevaram. Tam tam evoyate kontiya sada tad bhava bhavitaha. That whatever you're thinking of at the time of death, upon that mentality, your next body will be formed or generated. So Madhvacharya, his school, they place an emphasis on that moment of death when that comes. The Ramanuja school, they said, well, it's really more in terms of lifetime cultivation. Not just literally at that moment. Like we hear in the Ishopanishad, that sloka where the devotee, you can say, it says that at that time it may be very difficult for circumstantially, we don't know how that will come, may be difficult to remember you. Please don't forget if I did anything noteworthy spiritually. Because I might not be able to remember you. Prabhupada also liked the prayer of that Kulashekar Krishna Tadiya Parapanka Japanjarantam Adyeva Vesatumi Manasaraja Hangsa Pranak Prayana Samaye Kapabhata Pittai Kantavaro Dhanavido Smaranam Nukutaste. Saying, when that moment of death comes, and my, the three dhatu, the three elements in life running through the body, according to Ayurveda, they'll be out of balance. And it may be very difficult for me at that time to remember you. So here he's saying, now that I'm relatively healthy, now at this moment, let the swan of my mind take shelter of the stem of your lotus feet. So are there different prayers like this? But Ramanujacharya, that sadatad bhava bhavitaha, saying really how one is focused at the time of death, the heart they've cultivated throughout life, because bhava also means that heart in the sense of the core. The core of consciousness is the heart. We were talking about this earlier. There's the physical heart. And really, when we talk about heart, we're talking about the core of our consciousness. We're not talking about the organ, the heart. Right? And that being the most valuable possession of the human being. And Guru Maharaj is telling that one poet, how he said, just as, like in English, there's the word cultivation. In Russian, what do you have? In English, cultivation can mean like, you know, you can cultivate the arts or you can cultivate land and grow things, right? So it's similar. So he's saying, the heart is like a field of consciousness, and the seeds that you plant in that consciousness, what sort of fruit will they produce? So it's very important conceptually, what the conceptual seed that goes into that soil. One of the ladies mentioned something like that earlier, about the seeds of this idea, the seeds of this conception. So Charitamritam, Brahmanda Brahmite Kona Bhagyavan Jeev Guru Krishna Prasade Pai Bhakti Lata Bij. The fortunate souls, everyone's wondering the length and breadth of the universe. I mean, and the myriad of species of life, 8,400,000 different species, different possibilities. And all, what are they? Different levels of consciousness. That's what they are. The body's the biological expression of the soul's delusion. So the body is accommodating different type, different levels of conscious development. Right? He's saying, fortunate souls in this sojourn, length and breadth of the universe, come in connection, Guru Krishna, Prasadipai, Bhakti Lata Bij. Krishna's agent, Guru, and they get the conceptual seed of devotion planted in their heart. Then under the guidance of Guru and Vaishnav, that can grow into something substantial. See, in the case of Madhvacharya, he converted his guru. His guru was a Mayavadi, Achyuta Preksha, Madhvacharya. He took sannyas when he was 12 and went to the Himalayas. There he met Veda Vyas. So he's like a direct disciple of Veda Vyas. So powerful. He converted his Mayavadi guru, Achyuta Preksha, to devotee. In the case of Ramanuja, when he was young, Yadava Prakash, another Mayavadi, was his so-called guru. And sometimes the disciple, they would like be giving the guru a massage. So Ramanuja's like massaging the guru, and his guru, he thought that this one statement he had read in the Vedas was very was very amusing. His interpretation of that. It said about the eyes of Vishnu, it said kapyasam. So kapi means monkey, and asan means the bottom of the monkey, right? The rear. So have we seen in India, the rear of the monkey is like a pink color. So he thought, it's saying the Lord's eyes like kapyasam, like the rear of a monkey. He thought that was very humorous. But Ramanujacharya was massaging him. This pained his heart so much to hear that. They were told, hot tears started dripping from his eyes, pouring from his eyes onto the back of his guru, his teacher. And he could feel that, the hot tears, I mean, tears of rage. And he said, you have some objection? And Ramanuja was very young at the time. And he said, kapyasam means, it means who sits on top of the water and drinks the water through a stem, like a straw, a stem. He said, what that means is the lotus flower. The lotus flower, Ambuja, is born on the water, sits on top of the water and drinks the water. He said, so what it's telling us is the Lord is so beautiful that his eyes are like pink lotus flowers. That's what it's telling us. And that teacher, Ramanuja, he realized he's my opposition. He is my enemy. So, and that Ramanujacharya later, when he, we're told also, he was given a secret mantra by his guru. You can't tell anyone. And he was given the mantra. And everyone heard, now Ramanuja is going to hear the secret mantra. He goes and everyone's waiting outside, and he goes and hears the mantra from the guru. And as soon as Ramanuja comes out, he tells everybody the mantra. And he said, and they go, why are you doing that? And he said, I'm thinking your mantra will save everyone. Why should I keep it secret? Everybody should know. It tells us how sweet he is, actually, and affectionate, that he cared about people. So he, not selfish, he wants everyone to be liberated. And there's so many stories about him. One where his method of teaching, and he had so many great sannyasi, monk, disciples, But he had so many married disciples as well. And sometimes the monk think they're more superior to the married people for obvious reasons. And so Ramanuja, once he, while all the monks were bathing, he took their clothes and mixed them. So when they came out, they said, hey, those are my clothes. You know, you've got my clothes. They were all upset that somebody had their clothes. They're saying, so they're attached to this cloth. And I remember when I first joined the Krishna Consciousness Movement, and I joined in San Francisco, then was sent to Los Angeles. I'm just thinking about this. I mean, comparisons are odious, but it's just mildly humorous. When the laundry would come back every day, we didn't really know what we were doing. It was all being like made up on the fly. So it was considered a sign of attachment if you wore the same cloth consistently. Like if you looked for something familiar. So the idea was just take something and wear that, whether it fit properly or not. And you can imagine how this went over with the public. But like, you're saying like, if maybe you might have the same t-shirt 2 days in a row because, you know, you're thinking, I'm so fallen. I'm wearing the same shirt. I'm looking forward to wearing something that fits. So we had a little bit of a screwed up idea about what renunciation was. But anyway, so Ramanuja, he made fools out of those high-level monks and sannyasis by mixing up their clothes to show their attachment for such insignificant things. And at the same time, there was one disciple and his wife. He sent some of his brahmachari monk disciples in the evening to steal her jewelry. Right? So she is lying, sleeping, and she had like gold bangles on her arm. And the brahmachari starts pulling the bangles off of her arm. And then she turned and he thought, oh, she's awaking. And he fled, right? Only getting half. So then the next day she came to the temple and said, is there some shortage of money or some, you know, economic problem here at the temple? And they said, why? And he said, well, she said, last night, one of the brahmacharis came, he was like taking my bangles off. So I turned so he could take the other ones and he ran away. So he is showing to them, this lady with her gold bangles, she is more detached. Right? She had the superior type of devotion. So, many wonderful things in regard to Ramanujacharya. He wrote the Sri Bhashya and Vedanta Sutra. Also Madhvacharya, he was the incarnation, we're told, of Hanuman and Bhima. And great scholar. And being an incarnation of Hanuman, he could eat incredible amounts of bananas. Like huge amounts of bananas he would eat sometimes. And what does it say? That when he was a child, if his mother needed him, he could appear in one step. He'd like jump and he'd be right in front of her. Yes, mom, what do you need? And he was so strong, he once put his foot down and like the strongest man they had, he said, see if you can move my toe. They couldn't budge his toe. He was a really formidable personality. Great Acharya, wrote so many commentaries. One of his disciples asked him, He had a bull that carried all of his books and that he'd written and everything. And they said, when you leave the world, who will write the commentaries on your books? And he said, the bull. Because he is carrying all of that and hearing me all the time. Like, who knows what's in Milo's future? He's heard so much, it will come out at some time. No. They noticed this one, who was it, Jayatirtha, and this one, Acharya, that when he went to drink water, instead of like people drinking like from his palm, he would drink water like a bull. And then they could understand he was the bull in his past life of Madhvacharya, carrying all those books, and he went on to write the commentaries on his works. And that Madhvacharya, he says, according to Guru Maharaj, that every word has its local context. And he said, and that's like when you put reins on a horse, the bridle and the reins, that's you guide the horse according to where you want him to go. So we're all using language to express according to what we've perceived back to the pratyaksha paroksha plane. But Madhvacharya says, when you remove the bridle and the reins from the horse, then it runs according to its own inner necessity. So he said, every word, when you remove the bridle and reins of local context, will run to Krishna conception. And my experience, little experience of that in Russia, many years, when the first time I went, in perhaps 1978, 79, that we felt as we're speaking Krishna conception according to our ability, but it was the first time we were hearing it expressed in the Russian language, and we could feel as if the words were competing, like, use me to express Krishna conception. Don't forget me. I can also be used to express about Krishna. So like the language was offering itself in service to Krishna conception. It was a very beautiful time. And he presents his idea of, to help us understand how we go from this world to the highest aspect of the spiritual world, saying there's a thing, the devata of that thing, the god or goddess of that thing. Then guru tattva. Then Baladev, Nityanand Baladev. Then Radha Govinda Chidlilamritam, Radhan Krishna Chidlilamritam. In this way, everything goes there. And Guru Maharaj says, interestingly, but I say just the opposite. There's Radhan Krishna Chidlilamritam. And then from that, from Krishna comes Baladev. Like we were talking the other day, the Chaturvya, everything coming from Baladev. Nityananda's day is coming on Thursday. Then from him, the Guru Tattva, Guru, Devata, and that thing. So, the Adhoksaja realm, we didn't mention the last part. Aprakrita means the highest aspect of the spiritual world is the human-like dimension, human-like pastimes of Krishna. Krishna Jatika Kela Sarvatam Naralila Naralila Naravapu Tahara Sarup Gopavesh Venukar Navakishore Nadabar Naralila Hoy Anurup. That human civilization is based upon divine civilization. The human form is based on the divine form. Like in the Bible, what does it say? That man was made in the image and likeness of God. Right? Then I like to say, and what about woman? Then woman was also, like we were talking when we mentioned China, yin yang. Right? Male and female and male. They're just not some sort of abstract principles, right? Some abstract concept of femininity, some abstract concept of the masculine, but the personification of masculinity, the personification of femininity means the original male, the archetypical male, the original female, the divine male, the divine female. So only Krishna conception is truly balanced in this sense, because you have the predominating moiety Krishna, predominated half, Srimati Radharani. And what is there necessarily? The possibility of loving exchange, of loving relationship. And what is existence about, if not that? Freud tells us, What's driving the world? The erotic principle. Eros is what's driving everything. That's what's making the cochlea. We're hearing the cochlea now. They're searching for females. Those lizards are going to come soon. What are they called? Tokai? Huh? But they make the sound, they go, uh-oh. They have different names. But it's the same thing. The same principle is at play, right? Eros, and not just biological reproduction in that sense. That's on an animal level. The biological imperative, reproduction. That's what we see out there. But human beings, in addition to biological imperative, have this sense of like love, affection, kindness, sweetness, charm, these sort of considerations. So they must be at the heart of the matter of the original, the possibility for love and affection, not merely, you know, that we are promiscuous chemistry, addressing the biological imperative. One theistic lady is very intelligent, and she said that because if you take what Freud is saying, here's how much of an extremist he is, she's saying, then the whole purpose of art is just to bring about, it's just the biological imperative, actually. All this literature, all this art, all this big to-do, it's only about this. It has no other purpose. Thank you for that. Hare Krishna. Janma mrityu jara vyadi dukha, ahara nidraya bhaya maitunam jha. Eating, sleeping, fearing. This is what that is. Fear. Defense. Dharmena hena pashubhi samana. So what separates human beings from animals? I said this once in Mexico with Jagannath Swami. What separates human beings from animals? Shopping. You know, it's a store, but... No, that's not the difference. I don't want to be misquoted. It says, dharmena hena pashubhi samana, like we can inquire, like, what is my purpose? The animals do not ask such questions. All these night animals come out now. What is Chiang Mai famous for? Night safari. It's one of the things that's famous for. They have no conscience. When one group of animals prepares themselves to kill and devour another group. They don't stop, on a moonlit night and say, isn't that a beautiful moon? Isn't it romantic? Nice night to kill somebody else's children and devour them. They don't think, why are we doing this? It's madness. Not at all. No conscience. Right? Human beings stop and say, we shouldn't do this. Human beings, they think the moon is romantic. As Gurumayi said, the scientists, they've spoiled the moon. Right? They say, No, it's just some dust and rocks and things. Soon the Chinese will go to the moon and get their own rocks and dust. And they say, no, that's all it is. And Gurumayi said, these scientists, they have spoiled the moon. Leave us to our imagination. We look at them and go, oh, it's so beautiful. Isn't this evening romantic? Right? The honeymoon, the moon of poetry. All these wonderful things. Actually, from a Vedic perspective, Oshud, the medicine, as much as sunlight is necessary, the moonlight, nourishes and invigorates medicinal herbs. That's from a Vedic perspective. It has its place, the moonlight. We know that. Some of these things we know intuitively. But as Prabhupada said, we're not properly educated about these things. As when Salvador Dali was asked, Dali, do you believe in God? And he said, yes, but I have no faith. He means to say, yes, intuitively I do, but I don't have good association. I haven't been properly educated about these things. It takes some courage, actually, to admit that. But that courageous act of admitting that opens one to being enlightened. Hare Krishna. Any questions? That was Jamunacharya.
Well, that was Jamunacharya.
Jamunacharya is leaving the world. Hare Krishna. And wasn't Ramanuja approaching him to find out, like, what was his desire? He had his fingers like that, and saying he had three desires. One was that he has to guess what they are because he just left the world. So he's saying, Sri Bhasya, commentary on Vedanta, on the Upanishads, and Archan. Those are the three, as I recall. He wanted that a commentary be there on Vedanta Sutra, and Archan, because of its importance in Ramanuja Sampradaya. Although they emphasize that, and Vishnu Bhakti, and the Guru Maharaj points out, where we share much with them is on the point of Sharanagati, their emphasis on Sharanagati, that through surrender, you get full maximum grace of the Lord. And he presented these ideas of two types of surrender. Monkey surrender, and cat surrender. The surrender of the monkey we've seen in India, where the baby monkeys hold on to the mother and they're carried around. That's what they do. They clutch the mother from underneath and the mother goes here, there, and everywhere, and the baby monkey's holding like that. Cat surrender, we see the cat with her jaws grabs the kittens by the neck and lifts them up and carries them around. So they're just going like that. So the monkey surrender means like God helps those who help themselves. You have to do something. The baby monkeys have to hold on and then they're carried. That's more tantamount to the position of the neophyte who's aspiring. The cat surrender of the just helpless is like the higher devotees actually. They're taken care of by the Lord. Right. Any question?
Well, actually, this question is from China, so probably our Chinese guests would be happy to hear the answer. From one of your lectures, we heard that if one practices Krishna consciousness, then he is sacrificing for the ultimate cause. Is such a tiny personal sacrifice benevolent for the whole living beings? According to some energy philosophy, they say that if there are more people collectively chanting or having spiritual practice in one certain area, this will help to uplift the whole energy of the environment. Is that true?
The purpose of Krishna consciousness is not to generate verifiable improvements in the mundane world. Right? Like there's some people who say, well, we had a group of people appear in this one town over the weekend and do some kind of spiritual practice and the crime rate went down. Right? First of all, it's basically just nonsense. Secondly, you're still in the material world. So that is not our idea, is to try and convert the mundane world. It'll no longer be the world of exploitation. Right? But what we see, the example given by Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, he says, and he quotes the Bhagavatam, yata taro mula nishechanena tripyanti tatskandu bujo pashaka prano paharach chajatendriyanam savarhanam achuteja. He says, when you pour water on the root of a tree, the trunk, the branches, all the leaves are nourished. When you put food in the stomach, all the limbs, all the senses are nourished. So the focus of someone aspiring in Krishna consciousness to do that sort of seva, they want to dedicate themselves to the absolute center. And thereby, they're doing what is maximum good or maximum benefit for everyone. But that doesn't mean that the material world exists for a reason. Right? It cannot be eliminated. It's the world of exploitation. It is ruled by jivo jiva shijivanam. One living entity lives by exploiting another. Right? So the idea is not to take away the free will of other living beings who may choose to, reign in hell. That's their option. But still, how to serve everyone simultaneously is by dedicating your energy toward the root cause of all existence, toward the absolute center. Then you're doing the best that you can for everyone. And whether they will accept or not, that is their prerogative, cannot be forced. Like Guru Maharaj gave an inverted example one. There may be a group of thieves, and amongst those thieves, someone decides to be honest. That's also possible. He just doesn't want to continue with the thief program. And you can understand the inverse of that also. So there's, you know, the mode of ignorance, the mode of passion, the mode of goodness, and the nirguna plane that transcends them. Speaking of thieves. So some thieves, they take some man out in the middle of the forest and rob him. A thief in the mode of ignorance says, well, now that we've got his money, let's kill him. Thief in the mode of passion says, well, we've got his money, what do we need to kill him for? Just let him go. And the thief in the mode of goodness says, we've got his money, there's no need to kill him, and if we let him go, it's very dangerous out here, he could get hurt unnecessarily, why don't we like take him back, you know, to the road and let him go there? But they're all thieves. And the nirguna plane means always bringing someone in connection to the absolute center, to that plane. Therefore, that example, pour water on the root of the tree, give food to the stomach, then everything is nourished simultaneously. It's the best thing you can do for everyone. One man said to the Guru, well, why don't you do something valuable like the Boy Scouts? They're feeding people, giving shelter, doing things like that. And Guru Maharaj gave an example. He said, suppose there's a man, like we see sometimes people have an animal shelter, and they're providing shelter to animals, food to them, medical care. Not objecting to that, it's a fine thing. But he's giving an example. He said, so one man has an animal shelter. He's dealing with animals as animals and trying to, you know, keep them healthy, introduce some comfort into their lives. He said, but suppose there's another man, he has a program whereby he deals with animals in such a way as they're converted into human beings. Right. That's another type of program. That's the Krishna consciousness program, to convert an animal into a human being. Dealing with animals as animals, you know, that's within the saguna realm. To convert them into human beings, that is something miraculous and extraordinary. And as I told, quoting that poem, and he said, we need more people to specialize in the impossible. So that's our interest. Not just what's possible, but to target the impossible. Any other question? From anyone?
Only personal humorous one.
But what is that? It's a question or a comment?
No, a question. But from your pastimes, from your childhood. Yeah, so.
Yeah, let's not get into that. Hare Krishna.